Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm the latest post covering finance and property news. Another Monday, a soggy Monday, and Edwin is with me. Edwin, hello, how are you?
Just as soggy as what you are, Martin.
It's really wet down here at the moment. It's been raining really, really hard over the weekend. I've got wall-to-wall rain, and so have you. So I know it's dry in other parts of the world, but at the moment, there's a lot of water about.
Oh, look, there is. They've been seeding the skies again. I mean, that's what Dusty tells me. But listen, let's get right into it, Martin. Let's get right into it. Let's get stuck into it because, and for all of you that are watching, stop watching and go and call your property manager. Continue watching and then find out the reason why you should be calling your property managers, more to the point, right? But look, the sooner you contact your property manager, the better, because there's a collision course. I just keep on asking myself, when are we going to see the renters out in the streets demonstrating? Because the governments are playing chicken with the population.
Well, that's true, and of course this Wednesday there's going to be a meeting between Albo and the other state leaders with regards to housing, and they're going to try and push harder on this this question of supply, etc. The Greens are still pushing for rent freezes, and meantime rents are continuing to climb, and more people that I see in the rental sector are just getting squeezed harder and harder. But we keep coming back to this thing, Edwin, where do they go? What are the alternatives?
Exactly right, Martin. This is what we keep on asking, that question. It's all about the numbers, right? It's all about numbers. It's all about and with regards to the rental side of the ledger, we also need to look at the immigration numbers, the student numbers coming in. What's proposed? We're going to be talking about the latest proposals for with what's happening with the tourism and the visas that are going to be issued out soon. But to be serious and to the point with regards to this conversation, I like to people to start thinking about seriously, if you're a renter, you need to start contacting your property management teams and try and secure that 3-year lease. Anything beyond that, of course, will require if you're in New South Wales, NCAT approval. I'm not sure what the regulations are in Victoria or in Queensland. But look, you can get a 3-year lease. You can ask, you can negotiate, and negotiate a 3-year lease. Some will say, well, why should I negotiate a 3-year lease? Because it's, if I break the lease, then I'll be up for, the penalties will be very high. Things have changed. Things are a lot different than what they were somewhat years ago. So there are break lease clauses that you can negotiate in the leases. You also negotiate the rental increases throughout those 3 years, the 3-year tenure, shoot for the 3 years, get 24 months or at least 18 months, because things are going to get really, really tight. Come to a heads of agreement in organising rental increases based on the CPI or reasonable mechanisms that you could put in place with both yourself and the landlord, the investor by way of the property manager, and also agree on the upkeep and maintenance issues, because things are getting tighter, Martin, because the numbers that we're seeing is what we're saying. Let's get stuck into the numbers. Let's go straight to the point. Let's not diddle and daddle. The serious topic of tonight is all around the rental numbers, what's happening to renters out there, what I'm hearing on the different social media platforms, what I'm hearing on the streets, what people are fearful of, what they're thinking about, what young families are having to cope with on top of every other stress out there with regards to the economy.
Yeah, and what I find interesting is that some of the coverage in the media is beginning to pick up some of these things, but they're really giving a very skewed view as to what's going on. And interestingly, Phil Lowe, in his evidence to the House Economics Committee last week, said specifically that his view was that, rental controls and those sorts of things, and obliquely he mentioned first home owner grants as well, they don't solve anything. What they do is just to push the problem down the track slightly. So he was calling for much more strategic thinking about what to do here. But I mean, if you are a renter, it is tough to know what to try and do, as you say, extend the lease and try and get some sensible wording in the lease as to what the increases may be. But again, property investors are also being squeezed too, particularly on the investment side with regard to the mortgage. And so everybody's, being caught. It's getting worse and worse. And interestingly, Canberra, of course, is the one area where they do have rent controls at the moment. So you can only put your rents up by slightly more than the CPI. I'm not sure that rolling that more widely is necessarily a good strategy. But this is an issue that's been building not just for months, but for years, and it's really coming to a head now, isn't it?
Look, it is, and this is what we're going to be unpacking later on. From starting off with the with what's happening with the WeChat chatterers and what we've been hearing there, and as you know, the what they've been saying, what over the years have come to pass, and they're being ahead of the curve in many of the topics that they've raised, and in this case, obviously, it's got to do with the greater immigration policies or call it the open border policies, call it opening up Australia to the rest of the world. Obviously, the tourism industry is an industry that needs to be also fed here, right? So you've got parts of Queensland, Victoria, New South Wales, the wineries, everything, everybody else that's been starving for tourism, and a lot of it has come from Asian countries, particularly China. So now, things are opening up in that, but what it means is, in turn, with respect to the rental arena, it's going to put a further strain on the rental crisis that we're facing now, and it's a double whammy. But let's look a little bit into what's happening with the chatter with mainland China. I mean, and I've headed this off. Like the planes are coming, Martin. They are a coming. And they're coming in droves.
It is interesting. Now, this of course is in Chinese, but basically national travel tours can resume.
That's it. As of November of this year, it's pretty much the government policy. They put it out there. National travel companies can resume tours with outbound tour groups. And these are your tour groups that we would have seen in the past, people would have seen in the past. Your tour buses shopping around for properties, or going to the Hunter Valley if you're in New South Wales and other tour spots. Look, to couple with that, obviously, and to put credence to the commentary that's come out in the WeChat chatter over in the social media platforms there in China. You've also got South China Airlines have announced an increase in China Australia flights starting as of November as well. I mean, we're going to get they are proposing to have one flight a day. So in other words, the restrictions are being lifted. It's being very minimal, and this is just one airline, Martin. This is just one airline of the many airlines that are going to be flying to Australia, particularly Sydney and Victoria, right? And Melbourne. So you're going to have more tour groups coming in, and that's going to be very attractive for the Australian economy, because that's one of the pillars that we've relied on from an economic point of view. And that's a proposal on hand. And I mean, we can't read the Chinese, but you can see the flags there. They represent the destinations that they've opened up to. And as you recall, a few months back, we weren't on that list. tour groups from China could go abroad, they could go elsewhere, but we weren't on that list. Now we've come on onto that list, and currently the biggest inquiry from the tour groups from China that they've had, and they had a huge upsurge in, to three destinations: Turkey, Australia, and Japan.
Yeah, and so what are the implications, Edwin? So, we can expect more Chinese visitors, and I guess the question is, how does that then translate into the impact on the local property market? Are they coming just to visit? Are they coming to stay? How does that play in?
Well, as we've talked in the past, and the WeChat chatterers have alluded to us from years ago, we've been talking about the, I mean, we used to call them illegal migrants, and now then the terminology that got changed in the early 20s, if you recall, was ghost migrants, and we've been talking about the ghost migrants. And the interesting thing is, and what Dusty and have been looking at very, very closely with regards to the information that's coming out of there, and what they're looking at, and they've been analysing. Obviously, they're reading all sorts of different posts on the social media platforms in mainland China, in the WeChat over in mainland China, and the interesting threads or common threads that arise are the fact that the and this is what plays into our market, right? So picture the ghost migrants that are already here. Who are they? They in the past have been, people of blue collar workers from China, effectively looking to migrate and get a blue collar job here in Australia, but paying a lot more than what a white collar job would pay over there in China anyway. But now what you've got is, and what they're saying is that you've got effectively you've got a group of people that are becoming unemployable over in China. If you once you reach 35, it's like reaching 50, you become unemployable here, 50 more or less, right? But over in China, once you reach 35, and if you don't have a secure job and you lose your job, well, you can whistle Dixie trying to get back into the white collar scene. So what they're saying is that what we're going to end up with potentially is no longer the not so much of the blue collar workers that have historically have come over from China, but we're going to end up with your 35-year-old professionals that have been made redundant. Because and these are young people. They're still relatively young in comparison to our age group that gets put out to pasture, right? So, and the thing with this group of people, Martin, is that they're also very highly educated. They've got university degrees. They're highly skilled professionals in many professions. And this group of people, a lot of them, the majority, will have a greater understanding, a much better understanding, and can navigate with the English language than previous ghost migrants that have come. Now, the interesting thing to all this, without going into too much detail, is once you've got your tourist visa approved, obviously over there in China, it'll be approved fairly quickly. The government here has to approve it as well. But once you've got it approved and you're on that plane, look, you've pretty much got onto the first run on the first on the ladder of being able to stay and wait for it, being able to stay through different channels and applying for through different channels and making the various different applications. We won't go into detail. You could literally stay here in Australia for 6 years until the matter is heard, told that no, you can't, you won't get residency, you have to go back home. So theoretically, once you've got that tourist visa, you're on the first run, potentially to come over and stay as a ghost migrant and work legally. Now, not illegally, Martin, legally, by triggering different processes and making certain applications. So and guess what? The WeChat chatterers know this, and they are more up to speed with the immigration policies and regulations than we are.
Yeah, and it is worth underscoring, of course, that in China there's a huge issue with regard to rising levels of unemployment, particularly young people. You know, the official number is close to 21%. I was reading something the other day suggested that it's probably higher than that. So the whole demographic shift and the question of employment and all those things are putting significant pressure back up in China. And here is a perfect exit route, as you say, particularly for some of those who are perhaps a little older, to be able to come to Australia and participate in our employment and economy for a number of years. And of course, you know, the Albo government has increased the migration intake above what was projected in the long-term numbers. 400,000, I think, is the current view of the numbers. That's a big number. So essentially, we've got a huge number of people coming in, but of course, they're going to need somewhere to live. And this then roots the conversation right back into this question of, well, you know, there are people here who are actually making changes to property at the moment to be able to actually subdivide them into single, you know, rooms ready at relatively, you know, cheap prices for these people who are coming in. And well, they're going to jump at the chance, aren't they?
Look, they will, and the more property, the less property that is available, obviously the greater the appetite, and then you got on the sales ledger, the price are going to go up. I mean, I get, you know, there's a lot of banter, there's a lot of chatter over the fact that there's, you know, they want to spruik the listing numbers, but you know, we look at the numbers very closely on a week-to-week basis, and then not tracking anywhere near what they were in 2022, and there was less demand in 2022 than what there was here. And my fear is, one of my fears is that we will get into that Mexican standoff where people that are holding onto property, they won't want to sell because, again, there is that question is where do they go? Right. So, and what we've seen in the last over the last 3 4 weeks is that in the numbers that you and I have been tracking with regards to rentals, they're going down, particularly in the last two weeks. The numbers have really a bit alarmingly, they've gone then gone backwards really fast. Now, why would that be? Well, we're starting to see the effects of the, you know, of the migrants, you know, coming in. You've got the students coming in for the second semester as well. So, and we're going to see a lot more coming in, obviously, towards the end of the year. We've also got the, you know, the natural shift as well, local shift of people starting to go out and look for properties as we, you know, head into spring as well. There's a little bit more movement. So all these things are playing out and are starting to take away from those rental properties. But obviously, the other things that we're going to be talking about later on is what the local investors are doing, which you and I have been sharing about, and as to why that rental ledger is getting smaller by the week as well. And that is those BS policies that the governments are throwing around, trying to implement, and this is the double whammy that the rental the rental market or the people in the rental arena are facing, and it's only going to get worse.
Well, then you talk about double whammy, and you know there's a couple of things going on here because, of course, the number of properties are going down, the costs of insurance are going up, and the minimum rental standards officially are going up. So you can see these pincer movements. Well, what is that going to do? And I think your hypothesis has been that it could well end up with more properties going off the official listings and, well, frankly, going underground.
Yeah, that's right. And that's going to be that's the after effect. We're already seeing it now. This has been playing out for a while. Just you know, the hoorah moment for the WeChat chatterers was the you know, what was, you know, the opening of or the call for the universities and the opening of the borders for the students and the immigration lever that got pulled as soon as pretty much as soon as the government got into power. But you and I said that in 2019, the immigration policies were already changed anyway, and no matter who got into power, the fix was in. So what we've got is we've got Victoria and Queensland. They've already adopted the minimum rental property standards, which is putting a lot of strain on their on their landlords or investors that are holding on to older property that they have to bring them up to speed. Now, those regulatory obligations are going to be no doubt that they're going to be brought into New South Wales sooner than later, and it's going to be sooner than later. And that's going to put a lot of pressure. But outside of the government policies, Martin, we've now got the insurance companies, and this is hot off the press. This is something that the mainstream don't even know, and this is hot off the press, and this is breaking news on once again with the Monday Night Rant, and that is the insurance are rolling out their own minimum standards. In other words, what they're saying is they don't want to take the risk and the liability with properties that are over 30 years old. And first cab off the rank is the electrical wiring, which we've discussed in previous shows as to the importance of maintaining the switchboards, and you've got older homes that are the switchboards and the wiring is just the circuits are just simply overloaded with all the appliances and everything else that have been fitted in. So what they're saying is we're not going to take that risk anymore. One of the main companies is not insuring rental properties, the building component of it. They're not insuring it. But if you don't have a building insurance on your rental property, well, you've got rocks in your head if you're not going to get it fixed to get it insured. Because you're not if something should happen, not only you're going to lose your the whole building, and to rebuild something, it's going to cost you a mozza. So you've got scenario playing out where the insurance companies are going to be sticklers on what they force investors to do with properties over 30 years, 30 years and over. And guess what, Martin? I don't know about you, but there's a hell of a lot of properties out there that are in the rental in the rental arena that are over 30 years old. So that's going to put huge financial pressure on the investors. Hence why I'm saying that with this particular property management team that I was talking to, that they've just been hit with 5 to 8 properties that the insurance company through the broker that they get the insurance on behalf of their landlords, the insurance broker said, I can't get them insured, can't get them insured anywhere unless you can provide a compliance certificate that you've got new and new wiring throughout the homes. So that's not cheap. We're talking anywhere between $15,000 to $35,000 for a rewiring of a home.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Cameron Kusha made a comment to your tweet on the double whammy. He said, "This is crazy. You might stop rents rising for a bit, but hard to imagine people would invest in property going forward. And good luck trying to get landlords to improve the property or fix things." And it goes to the heart of it. This is a significant issue, which is again is going to reduce the supply of property that's available and the quality of the property that's available as well.
Look, definitely, and if you've so you've got your so you've got your two-edged sword coming in at landlords. One is compliance from with government policies, and the other one's going to be insurance. I mean, if you, I mean, you've got rocks in your head if you're gonna have a huge asset like that, and you're not going to get it insured. You can get landlord's insurance is totally stands totally separate and on its own to building insurance and to contents insurance as well. But and I raised this point there on Twitter, man, because Pete Pete put up the proposed what is it the freeze on rent and rate increase bill for 2023. And I thought that was, it's interesting when you look at it, and it gives you an idea and an indication. And he even highlighted or tagged the area that we need to read, and how it's going to make it more troublesome for anybody to think about being a potential investor or call it a landlord, particularly with older homes and older property. So I don't know what the government is playing at because, okay, we sort of get an idea. They're pushing you to the new dog box style of lifestyle. They're pushing you to the high-rise developments. They're pushing you to that type of lifestyle in the one part. But you're on the other side of that coin. You're literally forcing people to either sell because they're not going to renovate. The majority won't renovate them. And once you've got a rent freeze. And the rent freeze that he outlines there based on this policy is people are just going to think twice, particularly if they're going to be buying something that's older than the usual period or age that the insurance companies are going to be not scrutinizing. So you've got all these added costs. So the question for a lot of potential investors is why would I want to invest in property in the future? Why would I want to become a landlord if it's going to cost me more than what it's going to than what than the perceived value when I retire?
Yeah, and if you look at the small print, they're talking about a freeze for 2 years. There's a little few weasel words around it, but and I go back to what Phil Lowe said. Phil Lowe said that you can mess around with these sorts of interventions, and you might get a very short-term benefit, but longer term, it just creates more problems. I agree with that. And to my mind, we need to find much more strategic approaches to dealing with this rather than just trying to put a finger in the dike. And interestingly, of course, this is now running up to be a very strongly politicized debate. And Albo is effectively talking about using it for a double dissolution on things. So I think this has got completely politicized. And if you read the real text there, you've got to question what's really going to be the impact of this. And as you say, it's going to push more people out of the investment sector. And what we've done, of course, is we've effectively outsourced, property to the private sector and to private landlords. That's been a strategic direction for the last 30 years. So the amount of social housing has dropped lower and lower, and more people are absolutely reliant on those investors. Now, there are big pools of investors that are, big companies, but there's a massive pool of small individual investors with one or maybe two or maybe three properties. And so they're going to get caught in the crossfire here as well. So I can't see how anybody can win in this argument. Maybe other than the politicians.
Yeah, the politicians, caravan manufacturers, and tent suppliers. That's really putting it out there because it's going to be devastating. Even if you're if your what would you your bigger groups that are getting into the build to rent scenarios and your super funds, whoever's going to be jumping into that on that wagon, you by the time you actually start digging to obtaining an occupation certificate, we're still 3 years apart, even if they started digging tonight. Even if they started digging today, so there's going to be a lot of pain and a lot of carnage. And but how many more dwellings are going to have to be approved, right? How many more dwellings, apartments, whatever you want to put the people into? How many more are going to be approved based on the sheer number of migrants, students, and tourists that are going to be coming in and are going to be flooding the east coast of Australia? How many more dwellings have to be approved when you've got medium to first tier building companies that the report was put out by HIA a few weeks ago when we were sharing it that 50% are actually potentially 50% are trading insolvent. I mean, what are we going to be printing more money to throw at the building companies to keep them afloat? What are we going to do?
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing is, the other thing, I mean, according to HIA as well, we ran out of land, Martin. So where are we going to build apart from going down to Victoria, where the NIMBYs are, and nobody can complain anymore, and the Lebanese community are already packing their bags and going down to Melbourne, because you can't complain as a neighbour on medium density development according to the new regulations there. So my Lebanese friends are just telling me that they're going down to Melbourne. I don't know how true that is, but it's crazy. It's crazy what's out there.
Well, as I responded in a tweet when that came up, I said, well, of course, we have been digging a lot of Australia up and shipping it overseas, so maybe that's why we haven't got any land left. But we have a very large continent, right? I mean, if you look at it on a map, the amount we've actually populated is 0.0 something percent. So it is absolutely crazy, and it comes right the way back to what Phil Lowe said again in his in his evidence, and that is that the truth is that the things that have happened in recent years have actually not taken us in the right direction. And of course, the Productivity Commission, and there've been other reports and other people talking about all of these fundamental issues. But of course, we end up with these short-term fixes. And I just want to come back to the fix we're talking about here, right? In this particular agreement, because there's a couple of little weasel words. Like the first is 2 years, and then it says after the period mentioned above, the rental price is limited to a maximum of 2% every 2 years. And they also said that if a property is substantially renovated after the agreement commencement date, the price of the renovated property is rented as rented must not exceed the median rent price for a property of the same type in the same postcode. So what that means is that if you actually want to spend what you need to spend to be able to renovate, which is going to be significantly more than just the median rent in the postcode, you've got nowhere to go. So what they're doing is effectively legislating away further improvements in property, and then they're actually stopping property investors from effectively getting any returns for any of that above 2%. Inflation's running at what at the moment? It makes no sense at all, in my view. No sense at all.
No, and this is where you go into your underground rental management schemes, which is your budget accommodations, right? Because for now, look, if you're going to be running a budget accommodation dwelling, I can say to you've got 5 to 6 years to run a gravy train, because it'll take that long for anything to basically take away from the incomes that you will be getting based on the numbers that we are seeing, based on the numbers of people that are coming in, based on the number of people that are being disenfranchised from your traditional rental markets and have no choice but to look for dual shared accommodation, budget accommodation, and now with the opening up for this tourism and what China will do, mainland China will do with respect to that, and then the influx of ghost migrants, we may not see that effect straight away, but we will see it towards well and truly into the first quarter of 2024. But that's outside of all the other pressures already, right? So that's just another straw that's ready to break the camel's back. That's already pretty much broken. So this is why I say, how long is it going to be before there's a revolution? Before they're headed by the renters and people that are being literally, and I say literally, put out on the streets. One of our followers on Twitter said maybe Martin should start doing some sort of a census or some sort of a get some feedback on how many people have been have lost their rental accommodation, and they've got no choice but to go and park themselves in somebody's garage, caravan, or literally on the street, because that I can tell you now that number is only increasing and swelling rapidly.
Well, I can tell you that I have actually started putting that question into the survey now for those, particularly in the rental sector, and for those who are. So I've got basically households who own their property outright, those that actually own them with a mortgage, and those who are renting. But I've also had this other category, which has been a relatively small number of other. And other includes, people living with families or frankly, couch surfing, those sorts of things. Now I'm doing a bit more work at the moment in the surveys to try and actually begin to triangulate this because the numbers in the other category are actually rising. And so I'm now starting to ask some additional questions. Why, and also, what options are they going for? And it'll take a bit of time for that data to come through to be able to actually be statistically meaningful, but I think it could be quite an interesting and important insight because everything seems to me to be going wrong. The other point, of course, is the listings are going up slightly. We'll touch the numbers in a second. Again, what I'm seeing is quite a few of those who are listing are property investors who've just said, we can't make it work anymore, with these additional impositions in terms of the standards that are required, with the inability to be able to actually put the rent up sufficiently to cover the mortgage costs, all of those things, it makes no sense. And especially if we start to see property prices begin to slide down again rather than climb, then property investors have no reason to be in property investing. So this crisis just gets deeper and deeper the more you look at it.
100%, and the ones, the investors that are coming in, and we've been talking about it in the mainstream touched on it a couple of weeks ago. It's the all of a sudden, they're noticing all of a sudden all the WeChat owners out there attending the auctions and buying the property. And as you and I said, they've got a different reason and a different purpose. And they work under a different scenario. They've got their own websites. They've got their own channels of communication to communicate. Their budget accommodation, their rooms are let before somebody jumps on the plane in China. They're already let. Here, that's how quick WeChat is, and how quickly they converse and they communicate across that platform, and all sorts of things that are going on. So yes, we are seeing a rise. Traditionally, we did say there was a rise. There's going to be a rising numbers walking into, coming into spring. We are getting, closer to the official spring launch. It will get a Super Saturday auction day that usually kicks off the spring selling season. And the days have been relatively warmer, and people have, as you say, and as you point out, and as we've discussed, people have made that early exit from the landlords have made that early, the investors have made that early exit, and just getting out as early as they can. But I still don't see the numbers going rising as much as what a lot of people in the mainstream keep on pushing. And even the mainstream are confused in their articles as well. They're talking about rises in numbers, but they're also still reporting on, although there's a rise in numbers, people are still paying hundreds, in one case close to $500,000 over the reserve, which was about reflected about 25, 27% over the reserve in Arncliffe area, province like. So you still got those, that sort of narrative as well. So they're a little bit confused as to what's happening. But I sort of take what I'm seeing from the mainstream articles, what I'm seeing from the numbers that are on the different platforms, the chatter, your posts, your discussions, across the different commentators, and I've still got a 50-50 call that we could end up with a Mexican standoff, Martin. For the rest of the year, and if we do end up with a Mexican standoff, yeah, we might see an increase in a bit of a swelling numbers, but 500, an extra 500, an extra 1,000, doesn't mean jack when we're still tracking below 2022 numbers, and the demand is a hell of a lot stronger, and as many traditional investors that get jump out of the property investment ledger, and as you've got 10 more on the other side picking that same property up, And rather than getting $750 a week for it, they end up getting $1,500, $1,600 a week for it, because and it all goes underground. So all this is, that is playing out is really, in a lot of ways, you could call it chaotic. In other ways, it's the chatterers are very, you could say the way they do things, it's better orchestrated. But in one of the outcomes is the pain and the pressures that are on, whether you're single, whether you're a couple, whether you're a young family, whether you're an older family, whether you're whatever, it's much more pressure is being put on the rental side of things and on the population. And I don't know, I you know sometimes I just want to sort of, when I wake, just want to take a sleeping tablet and go back to sleep, because you just don't want to face and hear the pain of the renters that are that is out there.
No, absolutely. Well, let's just look at the numbers. So this is the Sydney numbers for the 7th of August, and it's 15,762. And if we go on to look at the next one, the 14th of August, 15,963. So a slight increase, but as you say, still well below the long-term average, which is not particularly useful. And in fact, if we look on the Melbourne story, so on the 14th, 23,004, compared with the 7th, 22,864. So, there's this pretty similar story here, but still, we're not seeing enough to really shift the market, are we?
No. Look, there are some pockets that you might get. I know of some suburbs in the Blacktown LGA. Over the next 4 to 6 weeks, they will that the listings on market will double. In one suburb, they'll go from currently they've got six listings. Within 3 to 4 weeks, that suburb will have two listings. But it won't be enough, even though they've increased threefold. And the reason being is because the other suburbs around it, that all you know that that demand a greater price, although they demand a greater price in property values, because there's hardly anything there. People that would otherwise can't buy there or can't afford to buy there because there's only a few listings, a handful of listings, they'll start looking at this other suburb a little bit further out, and you get into you still have that competition, right? You might have more listings, but you still got the competition, because overall, when you look at when you start mapping the listings on market, in certain areas, certain regions, when you start looking at the overall picture, there's not a lot. There is not a lot more, but let's not forget the fact that the WeChat chatterers have been telling us now for the last 4 to 6 weeks, be prepared for the second wave, and that's what they're doing. Because as panic sets in, as the narrative sets in that our mate Tom and a few other commentators, put in, about try and get out early, Mark Boris and Channel 9 and Channel 7 and the REA and so forth. So some will listen to that and some will panic and they'll jump. And this is what the WeChat chatterers are saying. When they panic and they come on market, you might see a downward trend, a little bit of a downward trend in certain pockets of Sydney. I'll pick them up, and but then we'll go back to square one because of that Mexican standoff that I keep on talking about, and that is the majority of the people that would that sort of want to sell, but they've got no options to go. They're going to stay put, and I feel that we could end up with low listing numbers all the way till the first quarter of 2024.
Absolutely right. And it is worth looking also at the auction numbers, right, which again don't really tell us very much at all. there's maybe a slight uptick. And it's interesting, I was reading some of the articles over the weekend who was claiming that there's been a massive surge in auctions, and it's showing that the markets are evolving, etc., etc. I ain't seeing it.
Now, you probably saw Michael Beverley's report from the AFR, and he said that was that it, was it? And I did a double take as I read the first two paragraphs of that article. And interesting how now they're not reporting on auction numbers in Melbourne, or they're not reporting auction numbers on in Sydney. If you go and reread the first two paragraphs, Martin, you'll see that they're talking about the numbers, the eastern capital cities. So they've merged all the numbers from the eastern capital cities to make it look more attractive, and it's come to about 19,000 or so, 1,900 and something. And that's what they're calling the uptake. I saw that article as well. But yeah, look, we talk about Sydney predominantly. We share Melbourne numbers and statistics. From as a going as a thread as make commentary, but I don't know those markets well, so I can't really dwell deeper into it. But I read that article. But overall, there's it's still teetering. If things were really going pear-shaped to an extent, you would see a lot more properties up. Even under the sale by underquoting, I mean sale by auction, and you'll get a lot more. We would be hitting the 1200s. But let's just wait and see. It's a week by week basis for us.
Absolutely. And it is worth just reflecting, this isn't just something that's happening in Australia. If you look at the US as well, there's some very interesting commentary now coming out, which is suggesting that people are parked in property because over there they've got low interest rates because they locked in some time ago. And so they don't want to sell. So again, supply is also dwindling there as well. And that's putting a little bit of a floor in some of the price movements, but the volumes are way down. And interestingly, that I was reading an article that said US realtors are now struggling as well because for the same reasons as here, Edwin, they don't have the throughput. If they don't have the throughput, they don't make money. If they don't make money, they can't survive. And so it's like, this isn't just an Australian thing, right? It's happening in the US, it's happening in the UK. I was talking to a real estate agent in the UK the other day whose sales volumes have dropped through the floor. Prices in the UK are sliding as well, by the way, at the moment as well. But the economics of being a real estate agent or a realtor, if you're in the US, well, it's shot to pieces at the moment.
Look, and we're only going to get deeper into the industry is going to get deeper into a mess, as I've noted on some of my Twitter posts as well, and I was sharing with George from ITC as early as today and last week, how I've come across a number of agencies in the last week that are outsourcing some of the critical work. They're outsourcing. To they've let go of critical staff and outsourcing that work that requires a lot of what I would say a lot of security, and we and basically they're really outsourcing the management of that to overseas companies, predominantly over in the Philippines. I mean, that's what's happening with the industry, because they are, one particular office is saying that they've decreased their that particular expenditure annually from 85,000 to 12 to 15,000. And then I said to him, but what about the risk? What if that information is hacked and used for everything else? Your PI insurance won't cover you, and you could be up for hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that's what's happened. They're taking shortcuts. The industry is taking shortcuts in a lot of with a lot of things in order to survive. And you and I again talked about the shortcuts that the building industry was taking, albeit with construction and that, because of the costs that were to keep the doors open or keep the machinery working. In the real estate arena, obviously, if you don't have those commissions, if you don't have those incomes, well, you're going to do away with critical staff that you could can have greater control. You've got more control of and more supervision over. Now they're outsourcing critical information overseas. I mean, we're playing with a lot of with a lot of fiery juggling a lot of fiery balls in the industry at the moment, Martin.
Absolutely. And I think it's going to get worse. And by the way, we should make at this point, because of all the things that are going on at the moment with this reviewing Canberra on, with the rent freeze, with the meeting on Wednesday, you and I are going to have a live show tomorrow, and we're going to be able to take questions from the audience with regard to these issues, because there are so many things that are not being adequately discussed in the mainstream. And so, it's going to be a really, really important show. So that'll be at 8 p.m. Sydney time on Tuesday. And if people have specific questions that they'd like us to explore, then they can do it in one of two ways. They can put it on Twitter, and we've put our Twitter handles up before. We'll put them in the comments below. But also, if you want to put comments or questions below this post on YouTube, I'll pick those up, and then we can use those for guarding the discussion tomorrow, because there are so many critical issues, whether you are in the real estate agent business yourself, whether you're owning property, whether you're a property investor, whether you're an occupier, whether you're a renter. So many critical questions that need to be explored. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow.
Looking forward to that. The last but not least, obviously, is the rental numbers, Martin. As you can see, and we've been reporting, they're just going down, and they're going down a lot more rapidly. They were ticking a little bit upwards prior to 3 or 4 weeks ago, but over the last few weeks, they've been going down dramatically. And obviously a number of things that have come to pass, and one of them being the second semester for the students. You've also got, sooner than later, we're going to have that effect, knock-on effect of the migrants, immigrants coming in, and the jump from the by the property investors and putting the properties up for sale as soon as they can, maybe in a bit of a lag, but now we're seeing that. Hence the reason why we're seeing this rental ledger really decreasing rapidly, and I would hate to see it decrease a hell of a lot more than what we've got at the moment.
Now, that's exactly right. And you put up a very interesting post on Twitter, or X, as I should now say, because I'm behind the times, but X marks the spot. But this is a really, really penetrating piece of analysis, right? The Felice numbers definitely on the on the wobble, and things like investors not being able to keep up with mortgage repayments. Investors not able to keep up with required renovation costs. Some are not willing to wait for new regulatory guidelines. Moving into spring is a season for people to look for rentals, so more movements in the market, continued build-up of immigration, and further government policy and chatter of more restrictions. I mean, when you put them on in one post like that, Edwin, gee, it's a nightmare.
It is. It scares the bejeebies out of you, right? And you sort of just like I said, you sort of just want to, as soon as you wake up, you just want to take a sleeping pill and get back under the covers because it's scary. And it's a sad state of affair for the renters out there. And that is why we started this podcast, started the show with a tip, and we'll leave it again with a tip of the week, and that is tomorrow morning. If you're a renter, get on the phone, regardless of the fact whether you've still got another 6 months to run on a 12-month lease, or 8 months to run on a 12-month lease, or whatever. Just get on the phone, and I would highly recommend that you start talking to your property manager and start talking about increasing the tenure of your rental lease, and try to obtain that, an extra 18 months, 24 months, and if you can, those 36 months to give you that security based on those 3 points that I also put up earlier, and that is that you can put in place reasonable break lease clauses, right? You can also put in place reasonable and acceptable mechanisms for increasing in annual rents and maintenance of the property that can work in both your favor and also the landlord's favor, because That's it, Martin. Well, I really can't say any more other than that.
But I think it's important, Edwin, that you are making one very significant point, and that is that, renters do have a little bit of ability to be able to influence what goes on. So rather than just sitting there waiting for the train wreck to emerge, grasp the nettle and being proactive, I think that's a really good piece of advice at the moment.
Yeah, well, look, I hope they're taken on board because we don't know what those minimum standards are that are going to be I implemented here in New South Wales. We know the insurances are certainly starting to make a lot of noise, and you're better off in the property holding on to a fixed term lease for a lot longer than a fixed term lease for a short period of time that the landlord and owner just has to wait a month or two and then make claims that they have to get things fixed and then the property's on the market for sale.
Absolutely, Eben. Well, I appreciate your time today. Look forward to tomorrow. Again, folks, 8 p.m. Sydney time, if you want to join us for the live stream and ask a question, we'll look forward to having that discussion there. And meanwhile, we'll continue to run our weekly property rants. And well, we'll track this, this crazy world that we live in. It is pretty much amazing, Edwin. Anyway, have a good evening. As you say, sleep well. And maybe when you wake up, it'll be magically improved. Who knows?
Who knows? Hope so. And all the best to everybody out there. And see you tomorrow.
Yeah, look forward to it. See you, Owen. Take care.